He kōna e ipurangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
So let's go and do this, shall we?
Sure.
I'm really curious to know how this larvae trap works.
It's.
I love how simple it is.
Everything is simple, yeah. You get too complicated and then kind of wonder what you're doing. I'll show you.
Kia ora and welcome back to another year of Voices Stories with me, Kadambri Raghukumar. In each Voices episode, I meet people from all around the world who've somehow ended up in New Zealand. We talk science, politics, sport, art, culture, you name it. And today I'm in an apple orchard, not a bad place to be on a warm summer's day in Hawke's Bay.
It would be good if we could find some fruit that have codling moth in them, but these are pretty young.
That would be the only time you'd ever hear that being said on an apple orchard.
Yeah, well for us that's what we're looking for. But it's a lot easier to see when the fruit is mature and it's red and then you get a big entry or exit hole.
We're looking for a hole made by a codling moth. They're little but can cause big losses for the apple industry in New Zealand and in orchards world over. I've never seen one, but I'm here helping trap some and learn about how the COVID pandemic affected pest control in orchards over the summer.
Well, my name's Tim Vandervoet. I am a scientist and entomologist, and I work on insect pests in apple orchards here in New Zealand.
So is this where we're going to go and put this particular trap?
Yeah, we'll look in here. The whole complex is a research orchard that's owned and managed by Plant Food Research. And there's lots of different blocks of trees. So this is one of the blocks that the entomology team manages, takes care of, where we do pest research.
Tim's American and has been in New Zealand for about 3 years now researching with Plant and Food. The Institute provides essential research to help avoid pest infestation in New Zealand orchards. Apple exports are, after all, worth nearly $800 million to the country each year. We've placed some traps in a couple of trees in the test orchard, and we're in Tim's lab around the corner. It's full of tables arranged with sticky pads sprayed with pheromones. All sorts of insects from the orchards have met their death on these. Essentially, it's a big bug graveyard.
It's hard to imagine the damage that they can cause. Codling moth is kind of unique because it will physically damage the fruit. So the moth will lay an egg, the egg will hatch and burrow into the fruit. And for most of its juvenile life stage, it will live inside the fruit, and then it will exit and pupate and turn into another moth. That makes it very difficult to control because you can't spray through the fruit. You only have a very small window and you can spray it. So in that sense, codling moth will limit the yield and also limit market access to certain countries that don't have codling moth. So a number of countries that we sell fruit to, they absolutely don't want any codling moth coming in because they're worried that it could establish a new population and infest their apple growing regions as well. New Zealand has a very good reputation for producing apples with very low pesticide residues, and that's really important for getting access to some of the export markets, especially the European markets. But at the same time, we can't have small or secondary insect pests on the fruit because we also sell fruit to Asia, which wants very clean fruit. A lot of the insecticides used in apples in the 70s and 80s were very toxic. They were broad-spectrum insecticides, so they'd kill just about everything in the orchard. And a lot of those insecticides were targeted at leaf rollers in the past. And when those insecticides went on, the codling moth would be killed as well. But now we use a lot more selective or safer insecticides. And the biocontrol is very effective for leaf rollers. And we don't spray for leaf rollers at all. But that means that the codling moth aren't under control anymore as well as they used to be.
So that means in order to maintain the export market, the industry needs to produce fruit with very low residue and no pests, which means a need to explore newer and more effective ideas.
We're looking at lots of different tactics. One is called the sterile insect technique, where we actually import codling moth from Canada that have been sterilized, so they might mate, they might lay eggs, but the eggs are not viable. And so we drop those codling moth from a drone over orchards, and they mate with the wild population that's already in the orchard, and then they don't have any offspring. So this could be a suppression tactic, or it could be an eradication tactic.
When was the last time you undertook something like that? When did that last airdrop happen?
Yeah, so we do that usually from November to February. There are, I think, 6 orchards in Central Hawke's Bay and a few here in Hawke's Bay, in a geographically limited area. We put out weekly drops of thousands of codling moth. And so the last one would have been late February 2020, just before COVID hit. This year, we probably won't do that trial or that tactic just because we don't have access to Canadian moths anymore with fewer flights coming in.
So what's the next best option?
Very good option that's been developed or refined here in New Zealand is mating disruption. And that's a pheromone, kind of like it's the same pheromone that we use for traps catching codling moth. What we do is we put in pheromone dispensers throughout the orchard, and it mimics the pheromone that female codling moth would release. So the males have a false trail to follow, and ideally they don't find a female, they don't mate, and that suppresses the population further.
How'd you get into entomology?
I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Africa, and I got very hooked on this idea that you could have big change in society as a whole by working in agriculture. And I really wanted to work on understanding the ecosystems and how we could avoid pesticides or insecticides by maximizing the impacts of biocontrol or predators within the system so that we could spray less often. More sustainability, lower toxicity, so fewer pesticides in the environment are obviously good for people and pesticide handlers and consumers. It's better for the environment because there's a lot of other bugs in the system that are very important, and even if they're unimportant, we don't need to be killing them all off. And from an entomologist's perspective, we don't want to get stuck on a treadmill where it's just one pesticide after another.
And you spend a bit of time working with cotton in the States. Tell me about that.
So I'm from Arizona. It's a big desert state. It's very hot, and cotton's very, very common crop there. It's a very robust crop. It's easy to grow. And in the past, there had been a lot of problems with pink bollworm and boll weevils attacking cotton, and they got on a treadmill of a lot of broadly toxic insecticides. When they stopped spraying a lot of broad-spectrum, broadly toxic insecticides, new pests came up. So that's what I was working on, looking at all of the predators and parasitoids in the cotton field, trying to identify which were the best and how decisions could be made, not on the negative impact that the pest posed, but on the positive impact that the predators created. Arizona cotton growers went about it from one direction, which was necessitated by low costs. Cotton is a commodity, you don't get a lot of money for it. Most cotton growers would have 1,000 to 2,000 acres of cotton any given season. And so they can't pay a lot for their pesticide inputs. So making smarter, less frequent sprays was important for them. That's one way that we shifted to safer insecticides and more biological control. In New Zealand, it's been very different. It's been more of a top-down approach. And part of that has been because the government and the industry body guarantee a certain product to importing markets. And those guarantees involve low pesticide residues on fruit and very low pest incidences on the fruit as well. So Arizona cotton growers were working with a low price commodity, New Zealand apple growers are working with a high value product, but the end goal is the same.
Back on the orchard, the goal today is to deploy a few more traps for the larvae of codling moth.
Because these pheromone traps are great, they're very effective and they're easy to use, but you can only put in maybe one trap or 25 or 30 even 50 meter radius.
And why is that?
The pheromone will interfere from one trap with another one. We set the trap up in the top of the canopy. That's why it's on the pole. Set it over the branch. And then you just leave it for a few weeks or a week. Come back and read the trap. And when you pass the threshold, you can spray. But if from a research perspective, that's really difficult. You know, you have a big orchard and you can only put in 3 or 4 traps. You don't get a lot of data from that. So what I've done is I've been in touch with an old expert, Howard Waring, who did a lot of research on codling moth before some of these other pests were a problem. And he recommended we just put out cardboard bands around the trunk of the tree. So when the codling moth larva or caterpillar comes out of the fruit, it will come down the trunk and pupate, or just hang out for the winter and diapause. What we do is we just wrap the tree with the cardboard, and it finds it to be a nice refuge or harborage, and it'll pupate in the cardboard band. So we can set the cardboard band around the tree and check that weekly or fortnightly, and if we put two bands on a tree over 50 trees, that's 100 data points rather than one or two data points from
with the pheromones.
One problem with this approach, though, is that the poo gecko like to come in and tear the cardboard band off the tree.
And for what joy would that be?
They're very inquisitive birds. I really don't like them because they come and antagonize me when I'm spraying. Some people say they can hear the codling moth in the cardboard scratching, and so they'll dig it out and eat it. I think they're just very inquisitive.
That's a perfect little food source for them.
Yeah. So the codling moth caterpillar will crawl down and say, this is a good spot, I'm protected, and it might pupate or it might diapause. We'll come and pull this off in a week or 2 weeks, and then look at the number of codling moth on this tree. Consumers who are eating New Zealand apples are probably eating some of the cleanest apples in the world.
And you can safely say that, having come from the States and having traveled elsewhere.
Yeah, I'd always take a New Zealand apple over an American apple. And the reason for that is because New Zealand exports so many fruit to the European Union, which has the most stringent pesticide residue acceptance levels in the world.
You came for the apples.
Yeah. I didn't really appreciate it until I came here. You know, Arizona's a desert. It's a dry state. We don't grow a lot of fruit, but it's nice being here. Yeah.
Where do you see the future of things right now?
Yeah, I'm very positive. I think that the growers see a future, apple growers in Hawke's Bay and the rest of New Zealand, see a future of producing fruit that might be spray-free, so having no insecticides on the fruit itself. We're very close to it now. I think we could be there in 20 years probably. And that just continues New Zealand's access to very lucrative markets and provides good income coming back to the country.
That's Voices This Week with American scientist Tim van der Voigt, based in Hawke's Bay. I'm Kadambri Raghukumar. Check out more stories, images and some videos too on our website on RNZ, and give us a follow on Instagram, RNZ_voices. You can also find us on Spotify, Apple, and all your favorite podcast platforms. The audio for this Voices episode was engineered by Claudia Sykes. I'm Kadambri Raghukumar. Thank you for listening.